did to this song.
Oh, tiptoe through the window, by the window, that is where I'll be. Come tiptoe through the tulip with me. From the garden, by the garden, on the willow tree, come tiptoe through the tulip with me.
What the fuck?
De mi tierra tapatía voy a dar de mi cantar. Arrullado por sus sones, se meció una cuna mía, hizo mi alma música. Sus violines y guitarras, en las quietas madrugadas son un dulce despertar. Alma virgen del mariachi, cuando escucho sus cantares siento ganas de llorar. El mariachi suena con alegre son, oye cómo alegra cantar mi canción. Suena la arpa vieja, suena el guitarrón, el violín se queja lo mismo que yo. Torres catedrales, como blancos alcatraces, alcatraces al revés. De San Juan de Dios mi barrio, lo que tomo huevo en jarro, la tequila es mi mujer.
You are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org, possibly the archive of this show on the Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the Huff website, where you can catch a lot of these old shows. I'm Robert Norris, and this is called Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. Today is August 18th, 2018. It's going to be running through some interviews, a review of part of the last Santa Cruz City Council, which I sometimes call the Shitty Council. That's not just because it closes the bathrooms at all times when it's not meeting at City Hall, penalizing the poor, the disabled, seniors, and particularly homeless people outside, but because of the legislation, or actually that they, not so much that they do pass that too, but the, what they ignore, what they tend to which is not on their agendas. That really is what you should look at when you're considering the shitty council in Santa Cruz. Mostly I'm interested in giving voices to folks outside city council, outside existing political organizations who don't usually get heard. And frankly, I choose those who I think are newsworthy, or at least on issues that either I'm struggling with or that I'm in agreement with. So that's my bias. That's where I start. And here we go.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So I mentioned the city council in the intro before the musical beginning, but they actually are online, usually a couple days after the council meets. And in fact, the audio of the long August 14th City Council session is available if you go to the City Council website. So you can hear it there, although it is long, and I'm trying to select parts of it. And I probably will do that in this broadcast, or perhaps in the Sunday broadcast, which I do from 9:30 in the morning on into the mid-afternoon, and a lot more time there to talk and fumble about. But some time ago, well, a show or two ago anyway, I had on the air, I played a video, the audio of a video, actually. You couldn't see the video, but you can actually go online, by a law professor called James Duane, entitled Don't Talk to the Police. Duane tends to talk at a mile a minute, which is unfortunate, but I liked a lot of what he was saying, and I hope that some of it was intelligible to you listeners. I don't know, and I'm going to try to monitor it more closely this time, so that if it's really seems to be proceeding too rapidly, maybe I can interrupt and say, hold it, and explain or comment, make it clearer to what's going on. And to make it clearer, I'm going to begin by reading from an article in a law review that James J. Duane, Regent University prof, School of Law, wrote back around 2010, I think it was published at 2012, called The Right to Remain Silent, A New Answer to an Old Question. And here's the short story. When a witness is summoned to testify before a grand jury or at a judicial or legislative proceeding, the lawyer for the witness frequently concludes that it may be in the client's best interest to assert the Fifth Amendment right to remain silent. Or, for example, if you're being prosecuted for a crime, your attorney says, shut up, don't say anything. And you often hear this admonition given by the police, at least on TV. And sometimes, if you happen to be watching the police in a real action, which is less likely, they tend to exclude people from those things, you'll hear that you have the right to remain silent. That's the Fifth Amendment. The lawyer will often give the witness a card to read aloud when asserting that privilege, but precisely what words should the lawyer advise the client to read when invoking the Fifth Amendment privilege? For more than 100 years, lawyers have shown surprisingly little imagination or ingenuity, advising their clients to state in almost exactly these words, on the advice of my counsel, I respectfully decline to answer on the grounds that it may tend to incriminate me. This article explains why that unfortunate language is never in the best interest of the witness, and why it naturally tends to sound to most listeners as if the witness is somehow admitting that he or she cannot tell the truth without confessing that she is guilty of some crime. I may tend to incriminate me is the wording that sounds that way. The article points out that this archaic invocation is not required by either the language or the theory of the Fifth Amendment, nor by the most recent controlling Supreme Court precedents, and concludes with a suggestion for an entirely new formulation for invoking the privilege, one which gives greater protection to the rights of the witness and also more faithfully captures what the Supreme Court of the United States has written about the nature of this precious constitutional privilege. And I'm going to read a bit of this. I don't know if we need to go into all the court references or maybe a great deal of the history, but I think his final suggestions as to what you should say instead of "I refuse to answer on the grounds that my answer may tend to incriminate me," there's something much better to say. And he talks about what that is towards the end of this article. But here's what he says in some of the article. Consider the following question that comes up rather frequently for lawyers, and I guess this magazine is mostly for lawyers, who practice criminal and civil litigation. But on the other hand, if you're defending yourself, you're your own lawyer, so keep that in mind. Suppose in representing clients who are scheduled to be questioned, perhaps at police headquarters or at a hearing, trial, or deposition, you've advised them to assert the Fifth Amendment right to refuse to be a witness against themselves. Just what words should they speak when the moment comes and it is time to invoke the right to remain silent? As every experienced lawyer knows, this question has a standard answer that has been almost universally observed for more than a century. As this article should demonstrate, it's time for a legal profession to consider a new and very different answer to that question. It's also true for activists. If you are, most activists don't act as their own lawyer in serious cases, and for good reasons often, because your main job is to beat the legal game. But for those who are in more minor criminal prosecutions, and I've been involved in a lot of those, or a number of those anyway, involving trespass, the sleeping ban. If you're going to be using the Fifth Amendment, that is to say, you don't want to answer, first of all, you should know that when a police officer talks to you, you don't have to answer, period. And you can do so if you want to with a respectful manner or a polite manner or not an impolite manner for that matter, depending on how you feel about it. But you don't have to answer. But if, for example, often a lot of these, in these days, a lot of the actions between police and activists is on video. It's videoed by third parties or videoed by an activist friend or videoed by hostile media. And it can mean something to people watching what you say when the police officer, you know, if you're asked, you have any questions, and you say, you know, say, I refuse to answer on the grounds my answer may tend to incriminate me, or the best thing to do is to say nothing, or as I've suggested in the past, to respond with a question yourself. What am I being charged with? Why are you talking to me now? What's your superior's name? Can you please call him? Give me some clarity about why it is you're telling me I can't leave under threat of lethal force. Here's what Duane writes in this continuing article. The witnesses have to say something, at least if they wish to bring any police interrogation to an end. That is, say, if you're being interrogated by the police, you're considered a witness in that case. Merely sitting in silence, even for 3 hours, is not enough to make an effective invocation of the right to remain silent or to cut off further questioning. And he cites some cases about that. Some answers sound more suspicious than others, of course. Does it matter which version you use? Not always. To take perhaps the easiest case, if you remain silent after receiving your Miranda warnings, anything you say may be held against you, you have a right to have an attorney, and so forth, that silence is not admissible at your criminal trial, either as substantive evidence of guilt or for impeachment if you choose to testify. In other words, they can't say, oh, he didn't say anything, see, so that must mean he's guilty when they come bring you to trial. They can't do that. In theory, that is supposed to be legally improper, or to say he didn't say he wasn't the killer, so that must mean, you know, there's a real question here. No, you can't try to impeach a person with their silence, according to a Supreme Court decision, at least back in 1976. That was as of 8 years ago. I don't know how true it is now. So the jury will not even learn that you invoked the Fifth, much less how it was done. But Doyle, the courts does not always require that the exclusion of evidence that a witness exercised the right to remain silent. At least in cases where your invocation of the Fifth Amendment was recorded by a video or in a transcript, There are many situations where a jury may be allowed to learn the precise words that you spoke when announcing the decision to invoke your constitutional privilege. And so, in other words, the jury may hear, if you're getting a jury case, that you said, I declined to answer on the grounds it may tend to incriminate me, when the police spoke, because they were videoing it and they're playing the video for the court. And so what this all boils down to, and I'm going to cut to the chase here, is what Duane's suggestion for people to say, and I have found this interesting. On the advice of my lawyer, I respectfully declined to answer on the basis of the Fifth Amendment, which, according to the U.S. Supreme Court, protects everyone, even innocent people, from the need to answer questions if the truth might be used to help create the misleading impression that they were somehow involved in a crime they did not commit. This is a perfectly accurate statement of perhaps the most important function served by the Fifth Amendment. But how different it sounds when the witnesses instead say that they can't say anything because they might tend to incriminate themselves. So better to say something to the effect of, the truth would be used to create the misleading impression that they were somehow involved in a crime they did not commit. So that was a lot of words, perhaps, for not a great deal. But I'm going to now turn to Duane's actual video, which is Don't Talk to the Police, which we heard some of if you were a regular listener to this show a show or two ago. This is more of the same, and hopefully it'll be interesting and intelligible this time, or at least the parts of it that we're going to hear now that we didn't hear before.
Just ask them. I close with this example. Here we have a couple of recent celebrity examples of why it is that even people who admit nothing always end up denying it. They always end up regretting it. On the left, we have Martha Stewart. She was the victim, the subject of an extensive government investigation that was looking into the possibility that she was guilty of violations of certain federal laws, securities laws, fraud kinds of things. They couldn't pin that on her, but they were able to get a conviction because she denied it. Talking to the police and later to some of the shareholders, she said, no, it's not true. I was not guilty. So they charged her with lying to federal investigators, and they got a conviction, and she was sentenced to 5 months in prison. Marion Jones, on the right side, another person who would still be out today if she had always taken the advice that I'm giving you now. She was asked if she had ever used steroids, a controlled substance. And instead of taking the Fifth, she said, no, I never took steroids when I won those Olympic gold medals. Later on, it turned out that she was lying. She worked out a deal. She pled guilty. She admitted that she was lying. And she, over her strenuous, tear-filled objection, even though she has two young children, was just recently sentenced to prison for 6 months. The guy who sold her the steroids, the pusher, he got only 4 months. But she got 6 months because she lied to the police and said that she did not do it. You see the problem. Michael Vick, who recently pled guilty, as you know, to these charges with respect to the operation of this dog combat sort of operation at his home. At sentencing, like many other criminal defendants, even though he eventually pled guilty, at sentencing, one of the reasons his sentence was a little harder than it might have otherwise been, the judge said, was because when he initially met with the police, he lied to them and said, I didn't do anything. I didn't do it. I don't know what you're talking about. Even guilty people, but not only guilty people, will always end up regretting talking to the police. So my advice to you, Justice Jackson was right. Any sane, competent lawyer in his right mind will always tell every client under all circumstances, I don't care if you're innocent. I don't care if it's the truth. If it's the truth, great. We'll tell the jury all about it. There'll be time enough to put our cards on the table. But before we get there, I haven't seen yet what the police got. They may have mistaken and confused witnesses who will contradict even the truthful stuff that you say. We have no way to know, no way to predict whether the information that you give them, even if truthful and reliable, will end up unwittingly dispelling our demise. So keep your mouth shut. Don't answer any questions. Let's take the Fifth. You'll be glad that you did. God bless America. God bless the Bill of Rights and the geniuses who bequeathed it to us. But now, in fairness, I give equal time, or what's left of equal time, to a police officer who will explain to the extent to which, if any, he agrees or disagrees with anything I've got to say. I have no idea to know what he's going to say, but it'll be interesting. Here, let me give him the microphone. Let's give him a hand. Officer George Brooks, the Virginia Beach Police Department.
I cannot talk that fast. Not even interviewing. I'm going to take the podium here, please. Professor. Because I took notes on some of the things you said. And everything he said was true. Okay? And it was right, and it was correct. And I'm just going to give you a few ideas. I'm going to tell you a few examples. But first, I'm going to give you a little information. As was said earlier, I've interviewed thousands of people. I've interviewed people with foreign police departments. When I was in the Navy, I was in law enforcement, and I was a criminal investigator. Thank God we're in the United States, because most interviews in Italy, Spain, and so forth start out physically. Okay, there's no police abuse over there. They can do pretty much what they want, anytime they want, anyhow they want. So just be aware of that and be thankful for where you're at. Biggest question I was asked when I first, I am a 3L, and there's some of my classmates in here. Best day is coming up, May 10th, when we get to leave. So those of you that are applying, and I told a couple of people this, you think it's hard getting into law school? Try getting out. Okay? A couple of things I was asked. How do I quit from getting speeding tickets? Very easy question. Quit speeding. Okay? But something Professor Duane brought up, are any of you guilty of anything? How many of you drove here today? Anybody go above 55 on the interstate? Anybody drive at home and go above 55 on the interstate? Because if you stay...
What are you raising your hand for? I told you, don't... I know. I remember. I did it intentionally.
And there you go. And people are inherently honest, and that's their biggest downfall. Okay? They really are. Or they want to tell their story. And if you drive 55 on the interstate where it's 55, the only thing you're going to do is meet the person behind you, because they're going to rear end you and you're going to get run over. Okay? So that's a fact. But everybody does something that they can get in trouble for. I can follow as a police officer when I was in uniform. I could follow a car however long I needed to, and eventually they're going to do something illegal, and I can pull them over. And justifiably illegal to pull them over with. So just be aware of that. Don't think you're so innocent in such a thing. When you get stopped for a traffic ticket, everyone likes to be somewhat honest. And what's the first thing the police officer asks you? Do you know how fast you're going? If the speed limit's 35, you'll say, oh, 38, 40, because you want to be kind of honest even though you're doing 50. You just said 38, 40. You just admitted to breaking the law. You just confessed. So they can go to court with that, with a confession that you were exceeding the speed limit. Okay, so you need to think about those things, and when you do become defense attorneys, which I may, who knows, you need to think about those things for your clients. The other thing you need to think about your clients, and this is going to seem very terse, people are stupid. Your clients are stupid. And I've had defense attorneys come up to me. Matter of fact, one on a motion to suppress just Tuesday come up to me and tell me his client was stupid. Okay? They're very straightforward. They do foolish things. They talk to the police. You guys need to be aware of that. Now, in my past, and it wasn't exaggerated, I have interviewed thousands of people. I've arrested and dealt with over 1,000 felonies. Well, actually, more than 1,000 felonies. Probably about 1,000 felonies, 2,500 misdemeanors. 98% of them conviction rate. 80% of them I don't even have to go to court. Why? Because there's confessions. Because they confess. So these people have no problem. The hardened criminals have no problem talking to the police. People like to tell their story. And they'll sit in that room and think about it. You're picked up by the police. You're in a little room. There's one chair here. There's a desk. There's another chair. What's the thing you want the most right at that point? To get out of that room. To be out of that room. Think the police officer's shift is ending in 15 minutes. Does a police officer want to get out of that room? My overtime rate's $58 an hour. Do I want to get out of that room? I have no problem. I'll stay there for 10 hours. I'll take that $600. Okay, so I have no motivation to want to leave. You do, and that's how we get you to try to talk. I have my job. My job is to develop probable cause, develop a good case. A great case is a case with a confession. Get it to the Commonwealth's attorney so that they can prosecute the case with little, if any, effort. And the Commonwealth attorneys love those cases, the little, if any, effort, because they come with a stack of files that high in court every day. So they love those cases. That's my job. The defense attorney's job is to hope they get to their client before I do and make sure they don't talk to me, no matter what. I'll give you an example, and this will go right along with what Professor Duane was putting up his examples. I had an interview that went something like this. Were you involved in the burglaries? No, I had nothing to do with them. You didn't have anything to do with them? No. You were in a car with all this stolen stuff in it? You had nothing to do about it? No. You knew it was there? Yeah. Okay, now we got possession of stolen property, felony. Okay? But you had nothing to do with it. No. So what did you need the money for? Well, I had to pay some of my court costs from another thing I got in trouble for. Oh, so he took the money from stealing the stuff. I have enough to charge him now with burglary. Simple as that. Well, did you see the picture on that camera of the house with the Christmas decorations? This is a real case scenario. Yeah, did you go in that house? No, I didn't go into that one. So there's ways around it. There's ways to get around people who try not to talk to you. And again, as Professor Duane said, if you wanted to go and say you wanted to go into a boxing match, $100 if you win. You've never boxed before. You have to face somebody who's an Olympic boxer. You're going to lose. You're going to face somebody who's been interviewing people for, in my case, 28 years. You're going to lose. Unless you're purely innocent. Now, on the other side of it, I don't want to put anyone that's innocent in jail. But I try not to bring anyone into the interview room that's innocent. And there are a couple that I have let walk away because they were innocent. Okay, the interviews. How do we approach the interviews? There's a number of ways to approach interviews. There's a number of types of people that I deal with. First thing I do, anyone know what they get told first when they're in an interview?
Miranda.
Miranda warning. Okay, it's not a right. You don't have a right to Miranda. Those rights have always been there. It's called the Constitution. You're just teaching. You're doing a real quick class on the Constitution for these people. Usually they don't listen to it. And this is the way I give my Miranda warning. Look, I have to tell you this. Just pay attention. Okay, they're usually sitting back or they're very attentive. You have the right to remain silent. Do you understand that? Yes. Anything you say may be used against you in a court. I don't have to say it will be. I say it may be. Okay, and they get that. You have a right to an attorney, and if you can't afford one, one may be appointed to represent you. Got that. You can decide not to talk, quit talking to me at any time and exercise these rights. Do you understand that? Sure. Now, before I do the primary thing that's needed with those rights, that's to get a waiver, I say, now, before you say anything, let me tell you what I know. And over all the time I've had to put together what this individual was supposedly involved, and I only say supposedly because Professor Duane's sitting over there, that this individual was involved in, I will tell the story that I put together, and it'll be pretty close to what happened. And I can see that it's pretty close to what happened because that individual starts slumping down in their chair. They'll put their hand to their face, doing this in their mind, oh, my God, I'm going to jail forever. Okay? And I can see it. And I said, now that you know what I know, do you want to talk to me? And why do I do that? Because if I didn't do that, is if I said, do you want to talk to me, they'll say no. So I give them the time to think about, and then comes the next phrase. Now, before you start talking to me, let me tell you the difference between a lie and a truth. If you lie to me, and I get before the judge, and I tell the judge that you were dishonest with me, that's just not going to make them happy. But if I get before the judge and tell them you're honest, straightforward, willing to take responsibility for your actions, that is going to help you. That's not a lie, though. That is true. In Virginia Beach courts, it will help them. You know, they may not get 5 years. They may get 3 years. They're still going to prison. Or they're still going to have a felony, but it will help them. And then I have to determine what kind of person I have. And there's two types. There's the one, like I mentioned to you earlier, where I have to talk to them about different things, get into their own skin, as the word is, and try and get them to talk to me and discuss things. I had a sexual assault case. I had to talk to the guy how hot the woman was, and I understand where he was coming from. And when I said that, we were buds. And he started talking to me. And he's still sitting in prison. Okay? So you've got to get in there and you've got to go places. The other side is, I can't try and act like that individual acts. Okay? I can't try and act like what we call lovingly a hood rat. I can't try and act and talk like him. Because I'm an older white guy. We don't talk like that. And that would be an insult. And you can't insult people. It doesn't matter who they are. It doesn't matter where they grew up. It doesn't matter where they're from. You can't insult people like that. You have to be yourself. So you have to get into their mindset and the way they're thinking and have a discussion with them. The other type of person is the one that likes to tell a story. This young man, great man, I love him to death. He didn't go to jail because I went to bat for him, because I felt sorry for him. He was a newlywed. He was having money problems. Former Marine. I said, tell me what happened. And he told me this beautiful story about what happened. What he had done is he had sold a piece of equipment that his ex-employer had that he had stolen. He told me the beautiful story of what happened about him finding it on the side of the road and all that kind of stuff. And I didn't even question about him. After he finished his whole story, very unplausible, but very beautiful story. I sat there and listened to it for 15 minutes. I looked at him, I said, you stole the stuff from your boss, didn't you? Yes, sir, I did. I had nothing. I really had nothing except the fact that he had sold it. So there's those types of people. And then the third type, the one who tries to be the hood, who tries to be the criminal, who cries like a baby when they walk into jail, but when they're on the street, they're as tough as rocks. You go in there with your paperwork, you sit down, and you just start doing paperwork. And usually I have a videotape sitting on top of it, just for measure, so they think I have a videotape. And you just sit there. Don't tell them Miranda. Just sit there and wait for them to start talking. Because they will. They want to talk. People want to communicate. They hate silence. That's why when people speak, you hear, when they're talking, because they need to fill that void with something. People hate silence. So that's the other one. So that's another way. So you see how there's an unlevel playing field here. Even with the most educated individual, there's an unlevel playing field. If you talk to the police, everything's going to be written down. If you get pulled over for a ticket, they give you the ticket, and you pull off. Do you ever see the cop pull off right after you? Usually not. That's because on the back of their ticket, they're writing down everything you said. And it's going to come into court if you go to court. Everything that's said, I write down. Every phone call I make has to have a listening device on it. Is that illegal? How many parties need to know that a phone conversation in Virginia is being recorded? One. I get many, many confessions over the phone.
However, in California, both parties have to agree. I don't know what the police have special privileges or not, which is a really good question. And the general answer is don't talk to the police over the phone. That doesn't happen to me much at all. Again, you're listening to an audio of a video called Don't Talk to the Police. This is a Virginia Beach police officer and a kind of a counterpoint with a law professor. I guess they're both involved in this law school. But let's take away from get a step away from this for a moment and do a little listen to a little music.
When I was just a little thing, I used to love parades with banners, bands, red balloons, and maybe lemonade. When I came home one May Day, my neighbor's father said, them marchers is all commies. Tell me, kid, are you a red? Well, I didn't know just what he meant. My hair back then was brown. Our house was plain red brick like most others in the town. So I went and asked my mama why our neighbor called me red. My mommy took me on her knee and this is what she said. Well, you ain't done nothing if you ain't been called a red. If you march for agitation, so you might as well ignore